Welcome back to Dateline New Haven at WNHH-FM. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Well, boy, does Frank Ritchie make New Haven tick. Frank is the newly reelected president of the International Association of Firefighters, Local 825. He was also the named plaintiff in a landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision, among many other roles he plays in our community, including serving as the subject of an upcoming play at the Yale Rep. Frank is here in the WNHH studio to tell us about some of that. Welcome, Frank, and it's nice to have you on the show.
Paul, it's an honor to be here. It's a show that I listen to and watch on a regular basis. And as I come from a newspaper family, and the press is truly one of our pillars of democracy, so we appreciate what you do for New Haven.
Well, right back at you. If you don't mind moving like a little closer to your mouth, was it your dad who was a reporter for the Journal Courier?
My father ran the circulation department for the Record Journal.
In Meriden?
Yes. So I grew up in a newspaper family.
All right. You grew up in Meriden?
Wallingford.
Wallingford. Okay. Well, anyway, congratulations on being reelected. You served 1 3-year term as president of the International Firefighters. This month, you got reelected, right?
Yes. I served 2 terms as vice president before that.
And you have 360 members, right?
Yes.
So, Frank, why did you want to become the president of the Firefighters Union?
Well, the Firefighters Union, it's a privilege to represent the men and women of the New Haven Fire Department, and I believe we represent the very best in municipal government. Somebody picks up the phone 365 days a year, they call 911, and a fire engine just shows up with the only goal to help with no paperwork. There's no other government service that can duplicate what the fire department does. And the fire union gives us a way to advocate for our members' health and safety. Unfortunately, this week we lost a firefighter in Worcester in a line of duty death. New Haven has a distinction of having the most line of duty deaths in the entire state of Connecticut, and we have one of the highest injury rates.
Wow, when's the last time we lost a firefighter?
It's been a while.
Chapel Street, was it, in that
yes.
fire?
It's been
around 2005 or 7?
No, it was earlier than that, but it's
that vacant lot there now, right, next to 1184?
Yeah, the thing is that it's not if it's going to happen again, it's when it's going to happen again. This business is a dangerous job, and being union president allows us to really advocate for our members' health and safety, which directly reflects on the community's health and safety.
All right. So as part of your position, you pushed the envelope, and what you did is you went up, you said you no longer wanted to be an affiliate of a broader union called the Uniform Professionals Firefighters Association. You went to court, and a very prominent judge took the case. Judge Thomas Malkisher, I always say his name wrong. I can't remember how to say his name, but everyone read his name because a couple of years ago he did a landmark decision about school funding for schools being unconstitutional. You know, he had the whole legislature, everyone scrambling to redo their jobs. So Judge Malkisher on December 10th ruled in your favor. He said that you had proved your case that this parent union misuses money and that you should be allowed to disaffiliate. So you're now disaffiliated from that union. What does that mean? Because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the police union did the same thing a few years ago. They said, we don't like the way our parent union runs things, so we're going to fight to be our own union. We think we can fight for our members better. What led you, Frank, to want to do that? I know the specific charge of misuse of money, but in a broader sense, why do you want to be an unaffiliated local as opposed to part of a broader union?
Paul, this was a vote by our e-board. Our e-board unanimously... I apologize.
No,
our executive board unanimously voted in 2016 to disaffiliate, to get our fiscal house in order, but also we felt we could do as good a job, if not better, at the state capitol representing our members.
So this was about political advocacy?
A lot of it comes down to political advocacy. We were stated as legislative-only members. So we, at the time, thought we were only paying for legislative services. So the board wanted to kind of take a step back, start doing our own political action, and advocating for our members.
Well, having Frank Ritchie leading your political fight is worth more than any money could ever pay for. But because of the pros and cons in that, some unions have a lot of power by being part of a national network, doing political advocacy, electing candidates, getting legislation passed. Was this union kind of asleep on the job, or...?
I think a lot of it is that they jumped into the partisan pool, and that hurts public
safety.
Meaning
that they were with one party?
Correct.
Which party?
The Democratic Party. And New Haven Firefighters, we support our New Haven delegation, which is 100% Democratic up at the Capitol. We have,
I think it's illegal to run for office as a Republican in New Haven.
It very well might be. I think it's in the charter. But the fact of the matter is, we support any individual that will stand with firefighters, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. And we support our Democratic legislatures, you know, 100% in New Haven. We have great relationships with Senator Looney's office and our other representatives. But it's important that firefighters realize that public safety transcends politics. Mm-hmm. And once you start advocating for other stuff, other issues, even social issues, once the fire department becomes political, you lose that moral high ground of, this is work. We should be dealing as a union with work issues, and we should be dealing with public safety, because anything that affects the firefighters union affects public safety.
Now, aren't you still part of an international, the International Association of Firefighters?
We are.
So how does that work? You're affiliated with two unions?
Yeah, it's a strange setup. Now,
how does that work?
The international basically takes care of Washington, and the state unions take care of the state legislature. You got to think of like Texas or New York. It would take you 3 to 6 hours to get to the Capitol. Where here in Connecticut, we're such a small state, it's very easy to get to the Capitol to testify for a bill or to.
So you had dues going to two separate international unions.
One international union, the IFF, and then one state union, the UPFFA.
So they were getting money from your union, your members, to represent you. And you said we could do a better job, and also that they were not spending it all on what they said they were spending it on. They were taking personal travel that they didn't reimburse. You said their political action committee money was fishy.
Well, what we did is, originally in 2016, it was to get our fiscal house in order, and we thought we could do a better job and provide better leadership at the Capitol. It was almost a year later that we realized that they were spending our legislative-only money for other things.
Like?
In the words of the judge... To support the demands for money, the court has heard evidence from the local, which is New Haven firefighters, of questionable expenditures of the state union, including personal travel that may not have been reimbursed, suspicious mistakes with PAC fund balances, and omission of a plainly improper loan the state union took and repaid from its charitable affiliate. This part of the case still continues. So
what's at stake for you now that you got permission to disaffiliate? You want money back from 16 to 17?
Well, here's the crux of the case. We won an injunction. So the judge, who's an intellect, it was an honor to be in his courtroom, he ruled that we're disaffiliated. So that part of the case is over. He also ruled that the UPFFA can no longer pursue charges against myself and the vice president of the union they were attempting to circumvent the court to remove us from office so they would escape public scrutiny. So that's been blocked. So now what goes on, and what the judge mentions and what I just read,
dues collection, right?
Is the misappropriation of funds claim and the breach of fiduciary duty. So all of these issues will be
properly vetted. What's at stake there? What are you seeking?
I think we're entitled to all our back dues. Originally, okay, we thought it was around $96,000, and now I'm thinking, I personally believe it's probably more around $200,000.
Over how many years?
Since we've been in 2006, I think they've been misusing our
dues. Really? Stuff. You listen to Frank Ritchie. He's the president of the local firefighters union, and he wears a lot of hats, and he's had a lot of headlines over the years in New Haven, as well as being a firefighter now for 22 years?
21 years, sir.
21 years, putting his life on the line to keep us safe, and he's here on Dateline New Haven. WNHH broadcast at 103.5 FM. Live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. So how is your relations with other unions in town, Frank? Like the police union? I remember once you guys were picketing the police union when they wanted to make a concession on health care, that you were worried that if they took it, the pressure would then be on you guys to take it.
We have great relationships with the police union. Craig and I are personal
friends.
Craig
Miller is the president of that union.
And he does a great job. And we're personal friends, so I think we get along with all the unions. We were sorry to see Cheryl Lynn after all her years of service.
At AFSCME.
Yeah, we had great relationships with her. So,
you know. So what does that stand? Did you have to make concessions because the police union did on salaries and retirement, on health care and retirement?
Well, that is the last contract, and unfortunately, it was just more than concessions. And I think that the city went a little bit too far, and I mean, the Democratic Party is for quality health care for everybody, right? I mean, that's the platform across the board.
Well, I always say, when people are upset about what public employees get, instead of resenting that they get decent retirement health care, let's fight for everybody to get that.
Well, that's
but you're sounding like Bernie Sanders, Frank. Which
No. Trust me, we'll make the line of demarcation soon. But if it's quality health care for everybody, then how can the city's platform be except for a firefighter or a cop's spouse?
And what are we talking about? We're talking about how much you can, how much your spouses are covered. I mean, they're covered somewhat, right? But you have to pay more, right?
They're covered, but when the newer firefighters retired, their spouses are not covered, and they have to do a buy-up. And we feel
meaning that they have to pay into it to have their spouses covered.
Correct. And we feel that we already have a high deductible HSA, so we pay into our health care. State workers, for example, are paying 2-3%, 4% into their pensions. We pay 11% into our pensions. So our members are stakeholders. We're doing our part, but we do believe that firefighters should be able to retire with dignity, and that health care, when a firefighter retires, their spouse shouldn't have health care.
So why don't you support Bernie Sanders' socialized medicine in some form?
No, I don't want to be waiting in line for medicine, and there's a reason why people from Canada are coming to the U.S. for our
for specialized treatment. But in polls, Frank, I believe it's 80% to 90% said they wouldn't want to switch it for American health care because of their basic coverage.
I don't know. It looked like we were moving in that direction, and the first promise from the President of the United States was you can keep your doctor, and we found out that that wasn't the case. So that's an issue for another day.
Fair enough. Now, when I asked you about other unions, what I always wondered why was, why don't all of New Haven's municipal unions, fire, police, supervisors, blue-collar workers, why aren't you negotiating jointly as one group the way they do in some other cities? Isn't it easier to pick you off one by one? Teachers, why aren't you coming, like having your contracts timed together and negotiating as a group the way they do with the state with CBAC?
We're in New England, and we like local control. So I wouldn't want to give up. I wouldn't want the teachers negotiating for firefighters, the cops negotiating for firefighters. We know our issues. Our issues are very specific to public safety, and
How do they do that? Like with CBAC, when they do negotiate together, there are certain issues that affect all of them, like healthcare and retirement. Then there are others that, as you point out, are very specific to the job that's being done. How is that usually done in group bargaining?
Your guess is as good as mine, okay. But I don't understand how you can provide appropriate representation for high hazard jobs like police and fire if you're in this big conglomerate.
So, Frank Ritchie, you said that you grew up in Wallingford with newsprint in your ink in your blood. How did you then become a firefighter 22 years ago?
My father always dreamed of being a firefighter after Vietnam. He actually scored number one on a test in Wallingford.
That's going to be interesting to come back to scoring number one. So what did he do in Vietnam?
He was in an engine room in the Samuel B. Roberts, in part of the first nuclear task force to go to Vietnam.
What's a nuclear task force?
It was the USS Enterprise is a nuclear carrier. So, it was the first nuclear carrier in the fleet. So they escorted the carrier to Vietnam, and then they shelled for the Marines.
What does it mean to shell? To shoot it with, from trying to attack them?
Support for the Marines.
Wow. You must be younger than I thought, Frank. How old are you?
I am 44 years old.
Okay, so that was way past your time, Vietnam.
Yeah.
Then he always dreamed of being a firefighter. Did you know that growing up?
Absolutely. Both of my brothers are firefighters. My uncle was a New York City firefighter.
So you got this family of firefighters.
I had a choice when I was a kid. I could be a firefighter, or firefighter. I just got to choose where I wanted to work.
What does that mean? Firefighter.
Basically, it was in the family. My brothers were already on the job.
They're older?
Yes, both of my brothers.
So how'd you land in New Haven?
It was my dream to work in New Haven. I love New Haven. New Haven is the city for Connecticut. We're the biggest.
There's New
city.
Haven, and then there's the rest of Connecticut.
Correct.
In every way.
Everything happens in New Haven. Yeah. I love New Haven.
I do,
this
too.
This is the place.
I can't imagine living anywhere else in the world, to tell you the truth, honestly.
This is the place to work. Yeah. This is the place to...
Aaron Good writes in, and I guess we're going to get this subject in more depth later, but thank you for listening, Aaron. The Yale Repertory Theater is putting on a play next February called Good Faith, Four Chats, C-H-A-T-S, around race and the New Haven Fire Department, which is, quote, a new play based on the landmark labor case of Ritchie versus DeStefano. And that's the case, folks, where Frank led a group of 20 firefighters who sued the city because they threw out the results of a promotional exam. And no black firefighters scored high enough, so under past interpretations of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, the city thought it was supposed to throw out the results. Frank and the firefighters fought at the Supreme Court and got new law made, a 5-4 decision, saying that affirmative action can't make up for lingering racial discrimination if it means throwing out the results of a test. And tell me, is that a fair way of putting it?
It's absolutely not, Paul. And I just okay. have to correct the narrative, because this is exactly what the city did. They poured gasoline in a room, lit a match, and walked away. So you said that not enough black firefighters scored enough.
None of them scored for promotion, right?
That is not true.
Oh, okay.
And ironically, we tried to get that narrative out, but once the lie caught on, we couldn't catch up to it, and it finally came out. I got
so how did you describe what
Chris,
you guys
were I got it out for? On Chris Matthews' show, but he was the first one to ask the question. So on our list for lieutenant, three individuals that just happened to be black were promoted to lieutenant, and two individuals that happened to be Hispanic got promoted to captain. Ironically, those three individuals that got promoted on the lieutenant's list, they're all deputy chiefs and battalion chiefs now and has succeeded through the ranks. So we believe that America fails when you look at somebody based off race, religion.
But the city's reason they gave was that there wouldn't be enough promotions of African Americans if they went by the list, right?
Correct. But then that morphed in the media to no African Americans okay. passed. And
so you corrected the facts, but wasn't the issue
yes.
whether, on the one hand, until your suit, it was the interpretation of the law in the land that because of past racial discrimination, that the argument is that it made it harder for people to succeed on tests. If a group, so say African Americans, scored, not enough of them scored well enough to get promotions, according to how many they thought should be promoted, you would throw out the results and try again. Versus, I thought your argument, as long as the test is fair and takes into account everyone has equal opportunity, that it discriminates against the people who would have gotten promoted if you throw that out.
But even before our case, if you look at the EOC guidelines,
the guidelines Equal Opportunity Commission.
Correct. The guidelines have a three-prong test. So a three-prong test. So if you give a test and you go do a validation study and you look at that test, you got to make sure that that test is job-related, which this test was. You got to ensure that that test measures the skills, knowledge, and abilities needed for the position. You can't give like an IQ test. It's got to be narrowly tailored for the actual position that somebody's going for. And then if that is found to be true, even if there's adverse impact and it meets business necessity, then the list is supposed to be certified. What happened here and what the New Haven 20 has always contended was the city disregarded the law and made a political decision instead of a decision.
But it was a 5-4 decision, two different interpretations out of how Title VII should work. It was a change in how the Supreme Court was directing governments to act. At least Mayor John DeStefano, as mayor at the time, claimed that he did the way he thought he was supposed to do it based on how the Supreme Court had ruled in the past, and that now the Supreme Court had a new opinion about how cities should operate. Do you disagree with him about that?
I don't know if I disagree. It was definitely a landmark case and kind of reset things.
Yeah.
In America, it seems like we have a pendulum of injustice. We're on one side, and then instead of putting it in the middle, they go all the way to the other side. And I think our case put it back in the middle.
All right. And then you became a celebrity, Frank.
I'm far from a celebrity.
You were on Chris Matthews. You're on a lot of TV shows. You went to the U.S. Supreme Court. Then you testified before the U.S. Senate's committee when Sonia Sotomayor was nominated Supreme Court. What was it like, kid from Wallingford, firefighter, all of a sudden being watched by millions of people and weighing in with senators, U.S. senators, about who should sit on Supreme Court? What was that like?
It was a great American moment. You know, the cost of our republic is vigilance, and the great American story comes back to the press that really hasn't been told enough. When Sonia Sotomayor ruled against us, she ruled against us in a...
she had ruled in an earlier level of that case?
At the Second Circuit in Manhattan. Okay. So... But she,
that's right, you lost, and Judge Arlington, too.
Yeah. Correct. So, but she ruled in a summary order, and summary orders are not circulated around the Second Circuit. So, basically, they brushed our case under the rug, and our case was dead. And it was only because of a newspaper article that Judge Jose Cabranes, who was appointed by Clinton, who
is from New Haven,
who mentored Sonia Sotomayor, saw a newspaper article that the case lost at the Second Circuit, and said he didn't even see the case, and he was the one who raised the issue that asked for the embank hearing so the full Second Circuit would vote on it, and he actually asked in his dissent for the Supreme Court to look into the weighty constitutional issues.
And Cabranes had a very interesting journey in his life. He arrived in some
He's an American hero, and it goes to show you that not all judges are politicians in robes, and he looked at the law, and here he was going against the individual that he mentored to say the Supreme Court needs to review this.
So now,
case.
Years later, that's 2009. Lots happened in your life since, but now this is going to be back in the local news as Yale Rep, which often features exciting new works, adventurous works of theater, has a play about you. You're going to be a character in the play.
Paul, I think I'm going to be viewing the play kind of like how Brett Kavanaugh would view Saturday Night Live. So I'm going to go in optimistic, but I think it may not be the most flattering portrayal.
My bet is that if it's a good play, it will not caricature you, and it will understand the positions and show why people come to the positions they come to based on their life experience.
I hope you're correct, and they brought in a great director.
I love the plays that you
have. Tony Leon he's won Tonys. He's on Broadway.
And who wrote it?
Karen, I believe her last name is Hartman. I don't want to misquote.
And did she spend time with you?
She spent time at the training academy. The department approved her to come.
What was that like to hang out with her?
She's very pleasant, very nice. I think we're on different political spectrums.
Did she challenge you?
But yeah, she challenged. I think she did a good job. And I think we had a conversation. And that's one of the problems in America is we spend too much time talking and not enough time communicating. And when people disagree with us, we try to demonize them.
So what's something the two of you disagreed with?
I don't know if I could come up with a very specific thing right on the spot, but I think that her politics is more to the left than mine.
Well, she's a playwright.
Yes.
Okay. But what do you?
She's an artist.
But what was the substance of some of that discussion that was interesting?
Well, I think that the opposite side would like to kind of view the fire service in a vacuum and say the fire service should just look exactly like the community it serves without looking at people as individuals.
So was her point, you're in a city that has a higher percentage of racial minorities than are in top? Oh, that's not really true anymore, is it?
It's not. And ironically, the individuals in top positions got promoted because of the New Haven 20. And that's kind of ironic, but it's very fitting because it shows it's about working hard, studying, reading publications like fire engineering, taking classes.
When she was watching, did you feel on the spot? They're your training camera. You conduct classes there, right? Your drill master?
Yes.
So what were you teaching them that day when she was there?
I believe I was teaching a tactics class. And the one thing I was impressed with is I figured that it would be when you have a high-ranking official come in the room, they walk in the room, then they go out, take a phone call, then they come back in. She sat there for, I want to say, 4 hours without moving and listening and asked substantive questions. And I think she got a little bit of an education that firefighting is dangerous work. And when somebody calls 911, they don't have time to look something up in a book that they have.
So what do you think is going to happen to your character as a result of the time she spent with you?
I don't know. I hope I'm a little bit skinnier than I actually am right now.
So Aaron Gusvestova's question was, is Mr. Ritchie aware of the production? Answer, yes. Has he been asked to participate in any community conversations surrounding the production? Are you going to be talking with the ARP types and others when the play starts? What's going to happen?
That's very possible. I was invited to the first reading December 10th. It was my 21st anniversary in New Haven. It was also the anniversary of my daughter's death. So my wife and I decided not to go, and that was the reason we decided not to go.
What happened to your daughter?
I had a full-term daughter, Carlin, and it was a court accident, and it was the first day I started the New Haven Fire Training Academy.
If you don't mind my asking, what does that mean, it was a court accident?
My wife was full-term pregnant, and we had the due date. We were just right at it, and then the cord got wrapped around the baby.
Cord?
In utero.
Oh, God, so, I'm sorry, man.
It was my first day on the New Haven Fire Department.
That's a big deal.
So I was invited to the reading, but we decided to stay
home. You have other kids?
So, yes, I have two other kids.
Was that going to be your first?
A teacher who's a kindergarten teacher, and his son is going to school for political science.
All right. So, Aaron, thank you for your question. Frank, thanks for talking. So you listen to Frank Ritchie on Dateline New Haven, WNHH 103.5 FM, livestreamnewhaven.org. So our listeners got a taste a few minutes ago of the level of detail you command when you get into an issue. So you were describing Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. You're talking about court precedent. You're talking about how the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission sets standards. You remembered that 10 years after that case was up. What I can tell you first person, being someone who covers Frank Ritchie, is Frank Ritchie could be involved in something as big as that or as small as what the rules were in a, not small in terms of importance, but like on one out of 100 pages in a contract. And when Frank presses an issue, he does his homework and keeps the rest of us scuttling to look it up and keep track of it. You're a bulldog when you get on an issue. Have you always been like that when you were a kid? Were you arguing about Little League rule book on the diamond in grade school? I mean, were you always a brawler kind of for when you believe in something?
No, I think my mother taught me how to be an issue advocate. My mother was responsible for most of the drunk driving legislation in the state after losing a sister and a brother in two separate drunk driving accidents.
Your family's had a couple of these.
Yeah, no, we have, what do you call it? So I learned.
What was your mom's name?
Nancy Ritchie.
You know, the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, it was her birthday yesterday, so happy birthday, Mom.
But why do I know her name? Is it just from the drunk
driving? No, she was in the press. You know, she's been invited to the White House. She was a powerhouse up at the Capitol, and you know, she taught, don't look at politics, look at people as individuals and fight for what's right. And, you know, our past union president who mentored me, Patrick Egan, you know, he quite often was the smartest guy in the room. I'm not ever the smartest guy in the room, but I've made my way by being able to tell you who the smartest guy in the room is and always outworking my opponent.
So always, and that's how you have dyslexia, right?
Yes.
And you scored what number on that test?
I scored, I believe it was number 6 on the lieutenant's test, but I scored number 1 on the battalion chief's test.
And out of how many people?
I think the battalion chief's test, I think there was like 22 of us.
And how does dyslexia affect the ability to take a test?
I have trouble reading. I have to read. For something to get in my mind, I really have to read it over and over again. The only word I can really spell correctly is race car. So it has always been a challenge with writing. So it's kind of funny now that I write for publications and, you know, write for
no, but is it fair to say you say you're not the smartest guy where you work the hardest and do the most research? I've never met anyone that's more research about, I guess Pat Egan does a lot too, but what holding people accountable. And that's what you do as a union president really, right? You really go to the mat over what terms of contracts are. You also make the philosophical points, and we'll get to like sirens and minimum manning. But you also look at what's in a contract and hold people to it.
Yeah, it's about process, and that's what makes America great, is that we have a process, and if we agree to a process, then all parties should follow the process.
I've always kind of tried to find solace in that I'm usually around people who are smarter and more talented than I am. I figure you just got to sweat harder. You got to push. You do. Yeah. So tell me about minimum manning. So let's take the wrap. And by the way, I will say that the time you took with me to understand the New Haven 20 case did open my mind and how to look at that issue and how complex it is, not just with firefighters, but about hiring. I think you do a great job at that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Thanks a lot.
And you're also a bulldog, man. I respect that. Okay, so firefighters have a good rep. Everybody loves firefighters, right? Unlike with cops, they don't have the same problems with everyone. You look handsome in your suits, and you're always there rescuing kittens and putting your life on the line, and sometimes kids and grown-ups. People don't feel the same way about firefighter unions. The rap is that they have narrow self-interest that isn't always in the public good. On the one hand, everyone agree with you that a lot of people agree with you that everyone needs a union. Firefighters, dangerous work, but even if it wasn't, everybody has rights that need to be protected, need health care and all that. You get criticized for a contract that is more generous than in other parts of the state in terms of how minimum manning, how many people have to be on duty, and firefighters responding to medical calls. It makes firefighting cost more in New Haven, and city officials have repeatedly complained that they believe they can spend less money and keep us just as safe with fewer engines, fewer firehouses, and having non-firefighters handling medical calls. Have you heard that criticism, and what's your response?
I've definitely heard that criticism, but a lot of it goes down to lack of information and a lack of willingness from the politicians to manage the issues. So, for example, it's not the union's minimum manning clause. It's an agreement between the city of New Haven and the fire union on what the minimum staffing should be. So it's two parties coming together to figure out what the proper staffing of New Haven should be. New Haven is a very unique city. Okay, our population density is very close together. Our homes were built in the 19th and 18th century. Where
it's one of the beautiful things about the city.
It's the architecture. Just walk around the city.
I love the older houses.
It's beautiful. The only thing is our older houses, unlike our suburbs, say in North Haven, if you go to the attic of your 2.5 wood that you see on every street in the city, and you drop a penny in the attic along the wall, it ends up in the basement. So as soon as we have a fire in the first floor of the basement, it's in the attic. So how we control a fire isn't how many firefighters you can get on scene. That's the wrong standard. how you control a fire is how many firefighters can you get on scene within the same period of time so that they can tactically control the building
before it all goes up.
Before it all goes up. So
before someone gets hurt.
You can't fight a fire incrementally. You can't just stretch one line, then get another company to stretch another line to get to the floor above, and then another line to get to the attic. It all pretty much has to happen at the same time. The other thing with the management part, because I know you're getting to the money, so I don't want to just give you what you'd consider
doing
a fluff, fluff
doing
answer.
Great. Doing great.
Is that when we accepted minimum manning as a union, that was actually a concession because firefighters gave up time and a half to lock in a number because we didn't want the citizens to suffer from Russian roulette with firehouses where they would close a firehouse one night. And if there was a fire at your house or your kid was having a asthma attack or somebody was having a heart attack, that it would increase the response time. So firefighters gave up time and a half. The issue with the city is they overhire because it takes a little bit to understand. But
their argument is they'll have less overtime if they overhire. But you say there's a point at which you save depending how much overtime you're given.
Correct, because here, it's cheaper to pay an employee straight time. It's not overtime. It's straight time to work instead of hiring an individual where you're paying
for
their families for health care.
Meaning your first batch of overtime is not time and a half. It's only after a certain point.
Correct, based off another Supreme Court case. So the thing is that they need to develop is what's the right number of vacancies to have because you want firefighters working straight time overtime. You just don't want it to convert to time and a half. So if they're working straight time, the city saves on health care benefits. Okay. Exponentially, the city saves on employee costs. However, if the employee hits Garcia, which is
the limit based on a decision that was made involving someone named Mr. Garcia.
Correct. Then the city loses money exponentially. So the city needs to manage the number of vacancies and not overhire.
Frank, what's the day you'll never forget as a firefighter? A day. I know there's more than one.
One day that I'll never forget because I can feel it right now as I sit with you is we had a fire at Saybrook College at Yale. The engine company was on a stab.
When was that?
I don't even remember the year.
Ballpark. Early in
2001. The engine company was on a stabbing. We are the busiest fire department in the state of Connecticut. And a fire came in at Yale with a report of a security guard trapped. The college was under construction. And to make a long story really short, we made entry without a hose line attempting to rescue the trapped security guard. And as I made my way into the room on the second floor in high heat, zero visibility conditions, I broke out a window when I heard a hose line operating to ventilate, and as I put my hands back down to crawl, I ended up in a shaft, and I fell to the bottom of the shaft. My mask got dislodged. I started taking in nasty feet of smoke, and at that point in time, for that split second, I wasn't sure whether we were getting out of there. As I was getting my mask on, I heard a kink, and it was Captain Bobby Gohuli, who was searching for the same guy I was searching for in zero visibility, and the kink was a Halligan bar falling next to me because it fell out of his hand when he hit the hole and he landed on top of me, ripping the muscles off my shoulders. And he calls me Cushion now.
So you saved him from hitting the ground and getting hurt?
He bruised his hip, but essentially...
But what happened next? You could have died.
Firefighters could die every
Why
day.
Why didn't you die in this situation? How did you get rescued?
The hose line that I could hear but not see when I broke the window, Engine Company 4 was operating at the bottom of the stair shaft. So when I fell, they actually radioed an urgent message. They thought the ceiling and roof was coming down when it was really just us falling in the shaft.
So what happened?
What do you call it? They pulled me out. They pulled
So you were pulled out. So someone saved you.
And the crews, Tommy King and the crews from Engine Company 6 and Truck 4 pulled both of us out. We got outside. And ironically, there was an individual there drinking a Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup with a security uniform on. And the deputy chief Ryan looked at him and he said, I went to get a coffee. So he went in the back door and then went out the front door and he figured he'd go get a coffee while the fire department was coming because the fire has taken control of the whole first and second floor of the dorm. So we were all trying to find him while he was getting a coffee.
So why do you remember that night?
Because I feel it in my shoulders every day. So I was out of work for 7 months. It was a significant.
What do you take from that?
It only takes a tenth of a second on this job to kill you or injure you. and this is a dangerous job, and we've seen it in Worcester. You see it every day in New Haven. They had a fire in a school this morning. We are the busiest fire department. And right. when you call 911, you want to know that your fire engine is going to be there within 4 minutes.
And you're one of the busiest people in that fire department, though you do Frank Ritchie. Frank, we could talk for hours, and I'm hoping I'm going to lasso you back here in February when the play starts.
Well, we appreciate the invite.
You're always welcome here at WNHH-FM.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us, Frank Ritchie. Thanks, everyone, for joining us at Dateline New Haven. Thanks for comments on the internet. And we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Fly free with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.